Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the world to share their time, their insights, and their expertise to help us and you grow our businesses. My name is Gary Lafferty. I'm your host and creator of the Authority Engines, where we take tech leaders, experts in their field, and elevate them to becoming authorities and turn the conversations into clients and their expertise into pipelines. Now, on this week's episode, I'm really excited to have Catherine with us, and we're going to be talking about what it takes to grow a business today, how you can look after your clients and grow tremendously, and much, much more. So without further ado, Catherine, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here today. Why don't you start off by introducing yourself and tell us who you are and what is it that you do?
Thank you so much, Gary. I am very excited to be here and thank you for extending the invite. Like you mentioned, I'm Catherine, originally from the UK, and I'm the CEO and founder of Candybox. We are a revenue operations, Salesforce and HubSpot practice, and we help a lot of those tech leaders that you speak with to grow and scale their operations so that their technology stacks actually drive growth rather than standing in the way, which is unfortunately something that can happen.
It certainly does. And I can't wait to dive a little bit more further and deeper into it. What is it that you do and who does it help? But before we do that, let's kick back a little bit. Let's dial it back. Let's talk about your journey. As you say, you're from the UK and it's great having another Brit on the show. So what led you to go from the UK to running a successful RevOps consultancy in Mexico?
Very good question. Definitely something people tend to be curious about. So I'm one of those people that has spent a lot of my working life abroad. I studied German at university and I moved abroad almost immediately after I graduated. I spent quite a lot of time living in the Netherlands, which is where I got my start in the tech world. I worked at a technology scale-up for around about 6 years, I think. Started in technical support, built out that function, and that's where I became interested in business operations. So I grew into support operations. Then I moved into the team that was managing Salesforce and the wider tech stack. But what happened with me is that after a certain point, I didn't always feel challenged by a traditional career path. I've later realized that that's because entrepreneurship is a better fit for me. But at the time, I didn't really know which direction I wanted to go in. So I had this general sense, like, I'm working at a really great company. I really like my colleagues. The work is interesting, but somehow something is missing, part of the challenge is missing. And for me, that became more and more evident as I turned these chaotic processes into really nicely organized ones, which is a lot of what you end up doing in business operations and RevOps. So I was looking for a change, but I didn't know what it looked like. And to cut a long story short, I went to Mexico on holiday and I met up with a friend and I was discussing this quandary with him. And he said, well, why don't you take a break? Why don't you do something completely different and come and spend some time in Mexico? We can go and travel. You can figure out what the next step is. And as a European, Mexico is very, very far away. And I had this feeling like maybe this is the big change that I've been looking for. So I ended up taking him up on that offer. I gave notice for my job in the Netherlands. I sold my apartment. I sold the majority of my stuff. It was one of those like whole apartment down to one suitcase kind of situation. And I came out here. And interestingly enough, when I made that big decision, a lot of other pieces started to fall into place. So the company I used to work at, they invited me to be a contractor with them and continue working on their business operations. Several other companies reached out to me. And they were looking for somebody with tech company expertise to help them out with their internal revenue operations. And what I heard from them was, wow, it's so refreshing to work with a consultant who actually has this tech and startup expertise. That's something that we've been missing with some other engagements. And that's what led me to realize that there was potentially a gap in the market for a company like Candybox to come in and specialize in the tech and scale-up space.
Let's talk about Candybox. For those who don't know what Candybox does, or RevOps or BizOps or whatever, could you describe, just tell us what Candybox does, the problem that it solves, and who is the ideal client that you tend to work with within the space?
Yeah, for sure. So for those who may not be familiar with the term RevOps, it is a relatively new term. I would say it's really become prevalent in the last 5 or so years. Previously to that, you would mostly hear talk of sales operations, marketing operations, sometimes customer success operations, but not a kind of holistic unified function. And that's what the goal of RevOps really is. It's trying to unify all of a company's go-to-market teams and their processes in order that together they drive revenue and growth in a unified way. There's a bunch of different ways of doing this. Different companies may focus on different areas, depending on how they're structured and what their goals are. But usually it's going to be partly people focused through things like training, enablement, how you structure your teams. And then also there's a technical execution element, which is a lot of what CanuBox does. That's like, for example, what CRM do you choose? What integrations do you choose? How do you build out your tech stack so that you don't end up with 50 different software subscriptions, of which you know maybe what a dozen actually do, and instead you have this really nice, smooth growth machine, as it were. And then there's a final pillar, which is focused around data. So like, how do you get data? And that can be about prospects, customers, behavioral signals, all kinds of different things. And then how do you action that data and how do you keep it clean? So that's my relatively short explanation of RevOps. And we're helping primarily B2B tech startups and scale-ups operationalize all of that. So what often happens with smaller companies is that they will start off without any kind of dedicated revenue operations function, which makes sense. You know, early on, you might want to be prioritizing something like sales over operations. You grow your sales team, and as you do so, you start to run into roadblocks. And those roadblocks will be things like, I actually don't know what my sellers are selling. I don't know if they're selling within deal guidelines. Once they've sold something, I can't track upsells. I can't track whether something has been renewed. I can't tell, because there's no integration between systems, whether we've actually billed a customer or if they're overdue. You'll see issues between marketing and sales, like marketing is sending leads over to sales, but they're not getting actioned, not getting picked up by sales because there's a lack of a handoff process. Or alternatively, marketing is sending through leads that haven't properly qualified. And those issues, they can really start to hamper a company's growth. You know, you'll have reps spending so much time. If we talk about like the lead qualification issue, they're spending so much time trying to tell, is this somebody I should reach out to? Is this somebody at a company that another rep has reached out to? And I can't really tell, you know, just looking at my CRM. And it's very inefficient and often leads to a poor rep experience and a poor customer experience. So at that stage, it may not be financially viable to hire a full-time RevOps person and start the function in-house. Or your company, you might not know exactly what skills you need. You know, do you need somebody who's strategy focused? Do you need somebody who's more going to get into the technical weeds, as it were? And that's when you work with a company like CanuBox, like a fractional team who can provide not only strategy, but also technical resources, who can help you understand what you're going to need when you finally do make that internal hire, and can help you align all of these disparate pieces so all of your teams and processes are focusing in the right direction towards growth.
Gotcha. So when we were talking before, that's a really interesting point that you make. It's all that the things are just higgledy-piggledy. There's no real joy in between the two things, and that just slows everything down.
Yeah.
And you've mentioned to me before that many of your clients say Salesforce, for example, is that Salesforce is built for enterprise, not for scale. What does that tell you about the current state of tech growth infrastructure, and what should people be looking out to do?
You mean this impression that if you're a startup or a scale-up, Salesforce is not appropriate for you, it's only for enterprise?
Yes.
Yeah, that is interesting. I do think that there are a lot of people who believe that. A lot of smaller companies, they do get the feeling that Salesforce as a CRM is overkill. It can be, but it depends on how it's configured. There are a lot of different options out there these days. So I would say that the two primary CRMs that we see and that we work with are HubSpot and Salesforce, and both of them can be great depending on your use case. So HubSpot kind of developed more from the marketing side of things originally. Hopefully nobody from HubSpot corrects me in my history of the company, but originally you had Marketing Hub, and then it's developed into more of a fully fledged CRM since then. But Marcus itself is very user-friendly, much easier and quicker to stand up than a tool like Salesforce. And I think that there is still this impression that Salesforce is a bit of a monolith, like you say, that it's too intimidating and too difficult to maintain for smaller companies. But I think that there's an educational piece that's missing. Like, regardless of which CRM you're using, how do you configure it to work with your business? And there's a different approach depending on your company size, your growth goals, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I've seen people who have over-configured HubSpot or other CRMs just as much as Salesforce. So I guess I think what it tells me is for some people, there is still a lack of understanding that whichever CRM you choose, it's not just a piece of technology.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just, you know, one size fits all. This is only going to work for a large company or a small company or a SaaS company or a manufacturing company. A lot of it is about how you configure it and also what extensible tools you choose to build out your tech stack. Because gone are the days where you just have your CRM and that's it. At least in the space we operate within, you're always going to have a dozen or more different supplementary tools that you need to consider within your overall tech architecture.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I mean, in its most simplistic form, I've got clients and I'm a great advocate for splitting a Salesforce for sales and something else for marketing, because there's a lot of, if you're doing your marketing right, there's a lot of stuff to be done with marketing that doesn't necessarily need to be put into Salesforce yet. And Salesforce, once you have that, can grow from that. That's in my personal experience of doing things. So let's talk about your company then, because obviously at the end of the day, this is about growing tech and growing tech companies. And we can't grow unless we have a good lead generation system. So let's talk about that, for example. What's been working best for you and your team when it comes to, let's say, attracting the right fit clients for you?
Yeah, really good question. So I definitely think that we're still learning. Like, there's still a lot that we're figuring out. It's always a process. Like, as your company evolves, as your services evolve, you always have to be thinking, you know, what problems are we really solving for our customers rather than like the ones we want to think that we're solving? What does the messaging look like and which channels are going to perform best? So if you ask me again in a year, who knows what my answer will be? But I think at the moment I would touch on two channels that have been really interesting for us as a professional services company. One of them is LinkedIn, and primarily like LinkedIn founder-led marketing, I guess I would call it, which for those who haven't heard that term is when you use your founder's profile, in this case mine, to disseminate a lot of your key messaging and to build relationships and create that audience. The second one that we've put quite a lot of thought into and is interesting is tech partnerships. So tech partnerships, they can take a lot of forms in the space that we're in. But for us, the one that's been most interesting is to take a step back. Like I was talking about, we will say that we are primarily Salesforce and HubSpot consultants, but within the tech landscape, that actually means that you're going to be integrating all of these other different tools within your primary CRM. A lot of those companies have partnerships with consultants that can be strategic consultants, it can be technical consultants, so that an expert is taking over the implementation of their tool and essentially helping their mutual customers to get the most out of it. It's not always desirable for the companies to create their own professional services arm. Mm-hmm. Some of them end up doing that, but a lot of them don't want to manage professional services completely internally. And they want to work with a network of trusted partners in order to make sure that their customers are as successful as possible. The sweet spot that we're always trying to hit there is part of our value proposition is that we're not tied to specific tools just because we have an agreement with that company. We're agnostic. We're going to make the best recommendation for our customers. But in a lot of cases, you know, what the best choice is, it's like one of maybe two or three different tools for a certain use case. And so we develop technical partnerships with those companies where they bring us in when they have a customer who's maybe struggling or who needs to achieve certain goals and it's not feasible for their customer success team to help them with that. And we'll also recommend those tools to our customers and introduce them to our partners if we think it's a good fit.
So let's start back to founder-led marketing, because you mentioned that earlier. You know, founder-led marketing is something we both advocate. You know, when we're speaking before, we know the value of that. Why do you think it is more founders don't do it? You know, because I appreciate in the technical, and especially within the tech industry, they don't usually like being in front of a camera, but the founder-led marketing is more than just being in front of a camera. Why do you think people are a bit apprehensive of doing it?
That's a very good question. I guess I can speak to my experience, because it also took me a while to get started on this. I would post on LinkedIn, I don't know, once a month, maybe once a quarter. And it would usually be something very safe, like, well, we got a 5-star G2 review, or, you know, company anniversary for somebody, very much in that vein. But since January of this year, it's been much more of a concerted effort. What stopped me from doing that earlier? I think it was a couple of things. One was just not finding the time. You know, when you're an entrepreneur, when you're running a business, or even when you're a leader, you can get bogged down in the day-to-day. Just, you know, hey, this client call, this, you know, this one-on-one, this team meeting, oh, I need to prep this contract. Those things can eat up your entire day. And then where do you find the time and also the creative energy to get your thoughts onto quote-unquote paper and then format them for LinkedIn? Like it, you have to carve out some kind of space to do that. So if you're not able to do that, then it's not going to happen. That's definitely one thing. I think the other thing can be like, how do I know what to say? Like, what do I want to say? And then how do I get these sort of vague ideas that are maybe a little bit all over the place out of my head and get the message across that I'm trying to? And for me...
And how are you doing that then, Gabby? Because obviously, as you said, you weren't doing it. You're making a concerted effort to do it this year, and not obviously getting results from it. But what kind of process are you putting in place? Because this is something I hear all the time. Like, you, and I totally agree with you. It's time. I would do it if I had the time, you know. Yeah. But then when they do find the time, is you hit the nail on the head again. I don't know what to say. Then I'm getting in my own way. Then I fumble over the things I want to. How do I get the message that's in my head out to the audience? So what happens with all of those roadblocks? Then people just don't do it. And you're absolutely right. You nailed it. So what kind of process are you going through to ensure that, number one, you have the time, and number two, you do get this message out?
Yeah. So in terms of the time, in my case, what it looked like was taking a bit of a step back from client-facing work. Back when I was still running projects for Candybox, it was very difficult to carve out time because you always have to be responsive to your customers. So even if you put, say, like a 2-hour block on your calendar, if somebody pings you in the middle of that, off you go. I think that there's other ways to do it. I know plenty of other professional services founders who are still very much involved in the delivery side. But for me, that was very helpful in making it possible for me to focus on building the business rather than just working directly with customers. And I do have a great delivery team, I will say, so that made it easier too. That aside, what do we actually do? So I have a team member who helps me with this, primarily in the idea generation kind of realm. So we do a weekly content call. And at first it was a little bit awkward, but it gets easier the more you do it. And we came up with a lot of different prompts. In the beginning, it was just things like, what's a highlight from this week? What was a low light? What was something that you learned? As a customer or a prospect or one of the team said something interesting that got you thinking this week? Like quite sort of broad questions. And then we would record this call and just talk for an hour. And my colleague who was kind of interviewing me, he would dig in certain areas, or he'd say, oh, this is really interesting. Like, that makes me think of X. Maybe, you know, there's this angle that we haven't considered that could make an interesting post. And from the notes from that call, we generate a bunch of different drafts, and we would just work on them together to come up with the posts. And then we sort of iterated upon it. So I think it's still a work in progress. I think the great thing about putting your message out there on LinkedIn is you get kind of immediate feedback in comparison to, say, something like SEO or writing an article. you often have to wait quite some time before you know what the impact of that was and whether it resonated. But LinkedIn, quirky algorithm aside, you can see almost immediately, like, is this something that people are interested in? Or are they having some kind of reaction to it? You'll see it based on the number of likes that you get within the first hour or two, and whether people are leaving comments. You can see, so you can't directly see whether people are reposting it sometimes or like sending it to other people via a message, but indirectly you sometimes can see it if a post has got, say, like a small number of likes, but then a very high engagement. It can be a sign that people are sending it to other people and like, oh, this is interesting, take a look at this. And that really helps you refine your message. It helps you understand what your target market cares about, what they're worried about. And then you can take that relatively immediate feedback you're getting and use it to refine what you write about in the future.
Absolutely. Yeah, great. I mean, what you're doing is something which I advocate a majority of my clients to do, is literally just sit there and work out exactly what you want to say, how you want to say it, and get it out there, because you can't make that decision. You have to let the market make decision on, is it relevant? Does it appeal to them? Is it a turnoff for them? You know, so I'm glad you're doing that. It is, because I'd be saying, if you're not doing it, you absolutely should be doing it. So let's flip this then, Catherine. What growth strategies or marketing channels just haven't worked for you or your clients? Are there any landmines out there that you'd say, hey guys, don't go anywhere near there?
Yeah. I'm not sure if I would rule any out 100% yet. One thing with a lot of professional services firms is that it's really common for them to grow through word of mouth and through referrals. So a lot of them grow up like that. And then you bring in more like traditional marketing and sales later on. So we have not been actively doing marketing and sales outreach and things like that the entire time that Candybox has been in business. So I think that there are still channels that we can keep exploring. But one thing I'd say that doesn't seem to resonate in the same way that it has done for, say, you know, companies that we work with is traditional outbound sales, so campaigns and things like that. I think that it has been a good awareness builder, but it's quite rare to catch somebody at the moment that they're looking for our type of service. Now, I want to be realistic. I think that there's more we could be doing on that front. You know, there's a lot of very interesting technologies out there that allow you to ingest intent signals from various different places on the internet and different business intelligence tools. So instead of just, say, reaching out to 100 companies that are in your ICP, you're reaching out, you know, 1 month after a key hire has been made, or when you see a job posting, or when you know that they're in a buying cycle for some kind of technology. So that hasn't borne too many fruit for us so far, but I do want to be fair and say it could be that our approach needs to be refined.
But that candor, I love always candor, because obviously at the end of the day, there's so much out there, and it's kind of like just making sure that if you've got a control and you know what works, like, you know, your LinkedIn is working and things like that, that's your control. Yeah. And then it's a case of just like then trying other things to making sure what you can use to complement them or even exceed them. So looking forward now, Catherine, what trends in RevOps or GTM enablement, go-to-market enablement, are you most excited about heading into the next 12 months?
So I think this actually ties in a little bit to what I was just touching upon. It's the rise of these more sophisticated technologies that allow you to build personalization at scale. Kind of buzzwordy, I think, but I think that does capture what a lot of them are trying to do. So you're not just blasting your message out there into the ether and hoping that you're reaching out to the right people at the right time. You're more intelligently deciding who to reach out to and when, based on more complete data. There's a lot of sales use cases for this, obviously. And like, hey, I want to reach out to a company that's just raised their Series A, for example, because we know that our technology sells really well for post-Series A companies. But there's other use cases that companies are starting to explore, you know, customer success use cases, for example, being able to get much more granular in terms of usage and behavioral data to understand, well, this is a person that's really being successful with our product, and we can keep bolstering that. Maybe we can introduce them to new features. maybe we can give them more seats to get more people in the company involved. And alternatively, like, these are signals that somebody is not doing quite as well. And then you have that possibility for early intervention, understanding, you know, was this just maybe not a good fit overall for, you know, the type of company we sold to? Are they lacking some enablement? Maybe somebody who bought the software originally left the company and we didn't realize. And so then you get a chance to turn that situation around. So I am really interested to follow the trajectory of a lot of these technologies and see what interesting use cases we keep coming up with alongside our clients.
No, exciting times ahead indeed. So what does the next 12 months look like for Candybox? What are your goals? What are you aiming for? Where's your next landing point?
Yeah, good questions. We're doing a lot of focusing on refining our messaging, which goes hand in hand with a lot of the marketing that we've talked about here today. We're trying to deeply understand what are the biggest pain points that our customers perceive us solving for them, rather than, you know, what we think we do, which sometimes there can be a disconnect. How do we phrase those? And then how do we make sure that that is understood, you know, throughout all different teams that we work with and our customer profile? And also when we do marketing messaging and we go to events and we, you know, have conversations within the RevOps community, we are also building out additional playbooks and best practices internally. We brought on a couple of new people recently. We're onboarding them to deliver our services. They're doing great. It's always really, I think, gratifying as a business owner to be able to bring in new people and seeing them bring all this new energy and excitement and experience. The interesting thing for us as specialists in the sort of SaaS scale-up space is that while every company is unique and different, you start to notice patterns after a time. And so you'll end up addressing the same issues over and over again in very similar ways. So that's something that we're working on standardizing so that we're faster to execute, so that we can be more proactive with our customers in identifying, okay, this is a sign that in 2 months you're going to need to evaluate X, or you're going to need to run this project. And then we can act as almost like, I want to think of a better metaphor, but the only one that's coming to mind is a canary in a coal mine, where we're there like signaling this is what's ahead, which is very, very useful to a lot of our customers. They're heads down in the day-to-day work, but we can let them know what's around the corner and how it should be solved.
Absolutely. It's been an advisor from them and saying, look, this is coming around the corner. Get on the bus, get off the bus, get off the track, whatever the case may be.
Yep, but it's going to affect
you. Yeah, exactly. It's going to affect you one way or the other way. So Catherine, I've got a loaded question for your last question. I ask every guest, you know, a similar version of this. If there was someone listening here or watching this who is hitting that next growth glass ceiling, as it were, what advice would you want to give them today that will allow them to look at things differently and go, okay, yeah, I'm looking positively towards the future?
I think I'll answer that from two perspectives. One from a personal perspective, just me, Catherine, and the other one from Candybox's perspective as, you know, RevOps advisors. So I'll start with the second one, which is we are obviously biased because this is what we do. But a lot of the time when we see people hitting that ceiling, as it were, or not knowing how to get to the next growth stage, it's because operations are not optimal and they're kind of standing in their own way. You know, teams are spending far too much time doing something that could be automated. You know, we had one customer a while ago, I think they said they had over 5 full-time people whose main job was just checking whether quotes that were sent out were correct or not. Like, that is valuable, but should 5 people be doing it manually?
Exactly.
Or should there maybe be a sort of a systematized solution? So that kind of thing is definitely good to have an honest look at and maybe work with an advisor if that's appropriate. Yeah, and on the personal side, I feel that a lot of entrepreneurship and running your business successfully has to do with your personal development. Sometimes we consciously or subconsciously stand in our own way. And for me, sometimes when I hit, you know, a ceiling or a blocker with Candybox, I have to look at myself and ask myself, as a leader, what should I be doing differently? Or what is it that I can't see? And yeah, I learn a lot about myself doing that. Sometimes you can do it independently. If you have a team member you trust, you can ask them for feedback. Sometimes it's great to work with a coach. But yeah, I would say it's always good to try to keep your ego in check and bear in mind that as a leader, you have a lot of influence on how your business develops or does not.
No, that's a great piece of advice. Great piece of advice, I got it. So if people want to get hold of you, potentially know more about working with you on Candy Box, what's the best way they can do that?
Anybody can feel free to send me a connection request on LinkedIn, Catherine Castle. I don't think there's too many of me with this spelling, and but even fewer who are based out of Mexico. Or you can head over to our website, which is Candybox CRM.
Well, I'll make sure those links are in the show notes below, so they don't even have to search it. They can go straight through and click through to you. But so, Catherine, thank you very much for joining us on this episode. And thank you very much for your time and the great insights that you've shared with us today.
No, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Not at all. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast. And as per normal, if you've picked up a couple of bits of, you know, blinding flashes of the obvious, or you just have some great ideas from something that Catherine said, please make sure you like and comment at the bottom so that people can see what they need to be picking up as well. But more importantly, please share this episode so that other people can take the insights that Catherine has shared with us and help them grow their business as well, because that's how we grow, by standing on the shoulders of giants and learning from them to grow ourselves. So until next time, until the next episode, thank you very much for joining us. Keep striving, keep working hard, keep being sensible, more importantly, please make sure you're profitable. We'll see you on the next one.